Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's summertime, so pack up the kids, fill up the cooler, load up the bikes, the kayak, the sleeping bags, and slip off to a deserted beach, a national park, or Disneyland for a few weeks. Enjoy the great American vacation. Oh, I bet you're feeling better already. There's only one thing wrong with this picture. Everybody's doing it but Americans. And where are they? Well, they're at work, chained to their jobs, logging more hours and taking fewer vacations than any other workers in the industrialized world. When it comes to toil, Americans make even the Japanese coiners of the word karoshi, meaning collapse due to overwork, look like layabouts. But work is good, right? Hard work plus long hours equals productivity, and productivity equals profit, and time is money, and all work and no play makes Jack a very dull boy, remember? Connection listeners, every other rich country has paid leave laws. Is it time for the U.S. to follow suit? Can Americans cure their vacation deficit disorder with legislation, or are they just going to have a breakdown? Cast off the Protestant work ethic and discover the inner slacker. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK, or join us online at www.theconnection.org. My guest today is Joe Robinson, an LA-based journalist and author of Work to Live, an upcoming book on American attitudes about work and vacation. Joe Robinson, welcome. You're writing this book, as I said, spearheading a legislative campaign for paid leave laws. Do Americans really need a law to tell them to leave their office?
Yeah, I'm afraid they do, unfortunately. We have a situation where people average 8 days off after their first year on the job, 10 days after 3 years. It's nowhere near the 4 to 6 to 8 weeks that they get off in Europe and the rest of the industrialized world. We're the only country of the industrialized world that doesn't have a minimum paid leave law, and I think we need one.
Vacation deficit disorder, define. What are the symptoms?
Well, it could go from heart disease to burnout, headaches, chronic fatigue syndrome is a part of it. It's general body breakdown, a mind breakdown of working continuously without let up. We have about half of all U.S. workers suffering symptoms of burnout, which is a mind-body crash that can lead to a lot of more severe results down the road, anything from strokes to depression. So we have a real problem out there, and I think that we have to look at what we do and why we do it. And I think one of the problems we have is that we just are afraid to stop, and we have this this guilt about when we're not working. There's that fidgetiness that people feel, and you know, it's because down deep people feel there's no value in anything but work here in society. So,
but can you explain this?
I mean, what
you point out is a particularly American disease. Is that? I mean, it's supposed to be. You know, the hard toil made America great. I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Well, it's a good thing, and I've got no problem with the work ethic at all. In fact, I got a ferocious one myself, but it's the overwork ethic that is the problem. We've got 80% of men now in this country that work excessive hours, according to the International Labor Organization. That's more than 62% of women. And the impact of all of this is pretty great on the society as well as the individual health. We have rampant depression and various diseases having to do with burnout. And then we also have, on the marital side of things, we've got divorce out of control. We find that in high hours families, two-income earning families, where both parents are working excessive 50-hour plus, there's a high divorce rate. In these divorces, 40% of the women wind up in poverty, and the kids usually go along with the women, so that puts them there as well. And then there's just the whole impact on the society at large. There's just no time to get involved in civic obligations. There's no time to, you know, as voters to even know what we're voting for when we go in the booth. You know, we just have no time to stop and think about our priorities, what we really want in life. Yes. We're just barreling ahead.
I think we're going to have a mass walkout by the Connection team before the end of the program. Yeah, actually, you point out that it's Americans, it's not the rest of the world. Let's hear from two expat Europeans now living in the U.S. First, Isabelle Guitta. Isabelle, you're originally from France. Tell us how things are different there to here.
Well, first, we do have much more vacation. I mean, that's clear. But also, vacation means something different in our culture. We talk about vacation a lot more than you do. It's like there is usually around Christmas time, there is between Christmas and New Year's Eve, this is off. Everybody's off, and usually it's family reunion. Then in February, there is, you know, the so-called February vacation. Most of the time, it's skiing, family skiing. I don't know of such a regular vacation in February in this country, the way we had as I grew up in France.
And come August, the whole place shuts down for a month, yeah.
And then whether it's July or August, it depends, and sometimes it's in between. But, you know, there is at least 4 or 5 weeks in the summer where most of my friends are off.
So, I mean,
it's not our case here.
You work to live and look forward to the vacations. What's it like here?
Excuse me?
What's it like here? How's it compare to what?
Well,
like?
It's very different. When we first came here, that was one of the main issues. I mean, how are we going to live with just 2 or 3 weeks of vacation? We started with 3, then my husband had 2, and this was a disaster. He didn't stay much with his company. And then now we're back to 4, which is, you know, feasible. And I work as a consultant, so I work my hours around my vacation. But also, I mean, what I was saying before is we talk about vacation. This is one of the common conversations that we have with colleagues and friends. You know, in January, you talk about the February vacation. Starting in May, you talk about the summer vacation. It's part of our identity. You need to know the other through his or her real identity, hobbies, what they like to do on vacation, more than what about, you know, what they're doing in their professional life. I think we talk more about vacation. It's more part of our personality, of what we exchange with each other.
Is there any difference, do you think, about how hard you work here? I mean, do you work less hard because you're working longer in America?
Do we work less every day in America? I don't think so. I mean, I think you don't work as well when you're exhausted. I mean, clearly, when you're very tired, you need to take some time off. And when you're stressed, you need to take some time off. That's probably best than any other remedy that I know.
Absolutely, Isabelle. Well, let's hear from a fellow Brit now, Diane Reynolds-Rome. You've been writing about your experience since you moved to the U.S. I think you reckoned you lost years in vacation time. Isn't that right?
Well, that's true. That was the moment when I truly saw the light about vacation starvation. I realized one day that if my family had lived in England over the past 20 years, I've been here slightly over 2 decades now, we would have actually gained more than a year and a half of paid time off. And I just felt as if a huge chunk of my life had been taken away from me. You know, it was like theft. I was shocked.
Well, I mean, yeah, we do things differently in Britain. I mean, here they shut down for Christmas Day. They don't even have Boxing Day. In Britain, shuts down from Christmas, well before Christmas, till well after New Year. And that's just one example. Is that better, though? Isn't that why England is a poor little backwater compared to the United States?
That's a good point. I don't think England reckons itself to be a poor little backwater, I have to admit. The economy may not be quite as good, although, of course, as we speak now, the economy here is not looking all that wonderful. But and, of course, that does in itself change attitudes about vacation time. But I think the British definitely feel that their avocations are easily as important as their work. I mean, I think, in a sense, here in America, people feel that they really can't grasp the fact that you might be dedicated to your work, but at the same time wish for time away from it, whereas it's perfectly acceptable to pursue other things in your life in Britain. I mean, many people have they maybe are musicians, artists, you know, excellent sailors, something
but
of that kind, which takes time.
People work hard, but they play hard here as well. I mean, I've never seen so many committed sportsmen and women.
Well, actually, that's very true. I think there's a huge weekend culture in America. And Americans work very hard at their leisure, which in a way, well, the British do too, but I think in Europe people are better at simply kicking back. And they take the activity of kicking back and doing nothing, maybe sitting in the garden reading a book, as a right and a very, very, very important thing. Whereas here, I think people feel very guilty about doing anything that looks like doing nothing. They need to be seen to be active.
Is that right, Joe Robinson? I mean, is that where it comes from, that you're defined by your job and nothing else?
Absolutely, and I think this whole question of identity is really gets to the bottom line there. I think that people here really feel they have no value unless they're constantly working, and it comes from this guilt that can be traced back to the Puritan ethic, but it was totally secularized in the 20s, of that you're, you know, idle time is the devil time, and you've got to constantly be working to have any worth, tasks. That's why sitting down to read a book might make people fidgety here as a result. There's just not a sense that you can not be working and be okay. You know, it implies weakness or you're a wimp. You have to constantly be proving yourself, remanufacturing your identity, which is 100% work. That's why we might do hard leisure on the weekends, but we do it in a work style, in a non-leisurely way.
Isabel and Diane, just thanks very much for joining us from a fellow lazy Brit. It was very, very nice of you joining. But Joe, the Japanese work fiercely hard. They study hard as students, so you have students having nervous breakdowns, and then they're in the corporate culture. I mean, surely they're worse.
Well, not by measure of the amount of time that they have off or the number of hours that they work. I mean, we have this conception of them working till 10 and 11 at night. We're actually worse than them because we work 3.5 weeks longer than them every year in total hours.
But is it as fierce, the work that's done? Because I was talking to a German coming over on the plane, and he said, oh, well, you Brits work longer hours. Yeah, but we Germans work a lot harder. That's why we need more time off. I mean, is there a trade-off here?
Well, you know, I think the whole productivity issue is a very interesting one. If you look at many European countries, their productivity rate is comparable or better than ours. In fact, last year, we had a number of countries in Europe, including Holland, Belgium, France, and Norway, that had higher productivity rates than the U.S. did. Now, the amount of time they worked took away in the final GDP analysis to make the U.S. number one. But it's simply a trade-off. They're choosing to get their benefits in leisure, and we take the money.
Connection listeners, are you proud of your work ethic? Is it what makes America great, or is it killing you? 800-423-8255 is the number to call. 800-423-TALK. My guest today is Joe Robinson, who's writing a book called Work to Live, as opposed to Live to Work, to talk you out of your work ethic. I'm Judy Swallow. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection. So, how much time have you had off this year? When was the last time you played with your kids? Is it time to rethink your priorities? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK, the numbers to call. Joe Robinson is my guest today, former editor of Escape magazine. He did escape to write the book Work to Live. We're also joined now by Lonnie Golden, who's an economist at Penn State University. Lonnie Golden, welcome to the program. You've been looking into this. You've got a wonderful word here, presenteeism. Explain what that means.
Well, I can't claim full credit for it. I think it was coined in Britain. But presenteeism is related to this discussion very closely because it's not entirely irrational that in the U.S. Workers put in longer hours because they're rewarded for being present. Presenteeism refers to the notion that you're putting in extra hours per day just to show your face, and as a result, position yourself a little bit better for raises and promotions. And in the U.S. workplace and in the U.S. labor market, indeed, a lot of research findings recently are that these extra hours are indeed rewarded.
Well, Woody Allen did say 90% of work is showing up.
I think there's evidence of that, and we know as college teachers that that certainly holds true.
But, I mean, where is the pressure coming from for this presenteeism? Is it because the bosses just want to see the workers busily all around, or, you know, from dawn to dusk and beyond? Or is it the neurosis of the workers themselves?
I think it takes two to tango on that one. You need the employer side factors, where it increasingly is economically rational for employers to work their employees as long as possible because of certain costs. So, for instance, because in the U.S. Labor force and in most workplaces, there's been a significant skill upgrading in the sense that there's more and more skilled workers on hand, and it becomes increasingly costly to hire and train such workers. It makes sense, at least from a very short-term standpoint, to work your existing employees as long as possible. In addition, you have escalating health insurance costs, and the way health insurance is structured in most plans with employers is you don't have to pay in anymore for additional hours just when you add employees. So from that standpoint, it's also cost-saving, at least in the short run, to work existing employees longer and longer until they reach a breaking point. I mean, it becomes irrational from the employer standpoint to go beyond that point.
You talk about the short term. Does that mean that for a while the worker who works longer is more productive and then is not, which would argue in favor of the boss keeping somebody on for a year or two till they're totally burned out and then hiring somebody else till they can burn them out?
I think you're right, and I think it really varies a lot by occupation or industry or by workplace. But the general rule of thumb is in research is that, let's say, in a given day, they find that after the ninth hour, people start being really fatigued or stressed, and that can lead to lower productivity and risk of injury and accident. So they will, in many workplaces, employers will push it to the limit, sometimes exceed the limit. If they're very conscious, they will keep their subordinates just to that point and allow them to go home or go rest. One of the key factors, however, is how much on the employee side they actually control their work schedule, their work location, the pace of work. And this is a very important factor because it's not just the length of hours. It's this control and flexibility that employees have.
Joe, which industries are the worst offender? Your book has lots of little vignettes and case studies. Who are the worst? Who shouldn't we work for?
Well, I think it's some of the high-tech industries. I think of a story a guy told me about. He was a college teacher out here, and one of the kids from his class, a really bright math kid, got hired by a dot-com during the crazy days. And right out of school, $70,000. He didn't have a place to stay in Houston where he was being transferred to, but the company said, you don't need a place. You can stay right here. And the company had, like, you know, you just slept, and you had a closet in your office, and there was a bed under the table. Kind of like a Seinfeld episode. And, you know, that high tech for sure. I think media is really intensely driven because of the deadline factor.
Oh, I'll go along with that, yeah.
I think those are probably a couple of the major ones.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK for all you overworked, stressed out people. Chris is joining us from Boston. Hi, Chris. Hi, Chris. No, I think we've lost Chris. 800-423-8255. Let's hear from Tom in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, more to the point? Overworked?
I am good. No, I think that I put about 16, 18 hours in a day. I own a construction company here in North Carolina. But you have to understand, if you're going to fully comprehend the workforce in America, that you have to look back to the 70s and 80s where we spent a lot of money. We were lazy and laid back, kind of lax. And now we're to the point where things have become more complex, more pricey and everything. So we have to work harder and try to regain what we lost when we were lazy as a nation and as a people.
Lazy, isn't it? You're working 17, 18 hours a day. You don't think that's overworking a bit?
Well, I think it is, but, you know, I figured when I bought a construction company and spent a couple $1 million, I would work less and have more time to spend with the family, but now I find myself working harder and longer hours and paying the government a lot more. So, and you have to understand, we have to pay our bills, and in order to do that, sometimes we have to work longer hours and put in better work.
Is it worth it?
Well, I think the ends will justify the means. I haven't seen it yet, but, time shall prevail with the truth, I guess.
Do your employees work the same hours as you?
No, they average around 10, 12 hours a day, and I have 30 of them. And it's a multitude of things that keep you working, but you have to push yourself, and you have to, you know, someone once said you have to have 8 hours of sleep a day in order to, you know, to progress regularly and fairly in life. I don't believe that. I believe you can program your mind and body to do whatever you want it to do.
Tom, you are a 100% workaholic, I have to tell you. You totally. But Joey brings up a point there. You know, it's not just the boss driving, it's self-employed are the worst offenders.
Oh, there's no question about it. I think that if you go into the entrepreneurial ranks, your life is going to disappear for a while, and that's kind of part of the game, at least in the early years until you get your footing and all. But I think an interesting point here is, and certainly a difference between what we do and what Europeans do, is that we'll do this hard work and we'll do 14 hours a day because of some place in the future that we want to get to. And I think the Europeans have more of a idea of living now. We're always into this postponement thing, is that, you know, we're going to be happy and we're going to live life, when we get the promotion or we get the raise or we have enough money, then we'll be happy. And I think the European idea of having this vacation thing really important in their lives a couple times a year is that, you know, they don't want to postpone. They just do it now, and they feel you can do both now. And based on the productivity stats in those countries, the evidence is you can do both. I think it's just in our heads here.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for your call and take a break. But the interesting thing he brought up there as well, Lonnie, is he said, you know, that he was working less hard a couple of years ago. Now he's having to make up for lost time. Shouldn't people be working less hard during a recession? Shouldn't hours be cut back during a recession?
Well, that's a good point. There's a few things that Tom brought in, which is that you kind of confuse working harder with working longer. And that's, I think, the cultural factor here is that Americans think that working longer means working harder, and as you suggested earlier in the show, or somebody did, that in Germany they try to work hard but also not work longer. But you're absolutely right. You would think that the recession of 2001 would have reduced work hours, output, all the things that go down during a recession, but I think when you eyeball the data, you find a very interesting trend that is occurring if you look at the national economic data, which is the more hours declined during recession time, the more productivity went up per hour, if you look at productivity per hour. Obviously, productivity per worker is not going to go up, but it's going to go down when there's a recession. But I would interpret that as this notion that employers were getting rid of these unproductive hours that have been creeping upward, you know, through the economic expansion of the 90s. And perhaps that employees are putting in some additional effort because they fear for their job security. So both of these are contributing to this, what I think is an interesting trend emerging, which is that productivity actually goes up when you reduce hours. And this is to no surprise to Europeans. This is what lies behind their whole philosophy of putting restraints on the work week.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Let's go to Lisa now in Laurinburg, North Carolina. Hi, Lisa. Are you a workaholic?
No, I'm not, and my husband isn't either.
Good.
We try very hard to live a kind of European lifestyle. My husband gets up very – I stay home with the children, first of all, and we had to make great sacrifices in terms of our budget in order to do that. But I stay home with the children. We have our large meal at noon. We all take a siesta. And my husband, who is a professor, takes the summer off. And so he can enjoy – we can go off for six weeks or 2 months even. And the result is we don't have very much money, but we have a great quality of life because he spends so much time with the children. And he's – just a moment, my daughter's at the door. and it's wonderful. So, in fact, we took about 6 weeks off. We just got home yesterday, and when people found out that we had taken a six-week vacation, their eyes just sort of glazed over, and they were sort of disgusted that we wasted so much time on a vacation.
Joe, she does bring up a point. I mean, he's a professor, so he can do that. I mean, teachers do get months' holidays. It's not everybody work with their nose to the grindstone. And you can make the choice, of course.
That's
well,
true.
That
and,
is, yeah, that's and true.
We had to make great sacrifices in order for him to go to school for such a long period of time and so forth. So I guess we feel that this is our reward.
Do you get criticism? You say that people are, oh, my goodness, you took such a long vacation. I mean, do you worry that you can't keep up with the Joneses?
No. No, not at all. And I just feel that that's really America's problem, is that everybody is so concerned about whether they have two vehicles or whether or not they have to walk to work or whatever. We've just sort of discarded all of that.
And Joe, I mean, you know, it can be done in certain professions. Teaching.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Teaching would be number one for anybody who wants to get more time for their life. But I think the point she just made about a couple of cars and all of the stuff that people feel they need to compete with others, I think is a big driver. Marketing is a big driver behind the hours as well, because people now are spending, according to Juliet Shore, who wrote this book called The Overspent American, about 30% to 70% more than they were 10 years ago. All of this is done to sort of create status and self-image for people that doesn't come from their real life, because they don't have it. It's all tied up in work and stuff. And I think that's where we're so different from the way Europeans come at it, because they have an identity outside the social persona of the job in the stuff they do in their real lives.
I do think there's a little bit too much stereotyping going on here, Joe. I know a lot of hard-beat working people in Europe as well. But Lisa, thanks very much for your call. I'll have to let you go now. Your daughter's there. It's time for lunch, time for your siesta. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. For those of you who aren't taking a siesta, Richard's joining us from Boston. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling because I really find it distressing that I find more often with myself and with my friends that employers are inflicting these schedules on American workers as opposed to vice versa, and that I find it really disgusting to have to work obscenely long hours and not take any vacation. I personally have set myself up into a job over a lot of job experimentation, where as a graphic design contractor and freelancer, I can take whatever time off that I want so long as I don't get paid for it. And with my values the way they are, I take off at least 4 weeks a year, and I just suck up the fact that I'm not getting paid for that time, because that's what's important to me. And I think it's really distressing that in most jobs in this country, people don't have the option to make that choice, to say, you know, okay, fine, I'll take less money and I'll have more time off, because that's not even an option for most American workers.
But
and
Richard,
they're forced
Richard,
to work more.
As you say, presenteeism is a sort of national disease, if you like, that you've got to be there to be promoted. But don't you, as a freelance, worry sometimes too as well that if your face isn't seen around the building, that you're very, very soon going to be forgotten?
Actually, what I worry about is if my materials aren't seen around, then I'm going to be forgotten.
So you leave your...
I work on a product basis instead of on I showed up basis. I think if Americans were actually paid to get work done instead of sit around the office, we would probably be more productive like the Europeans. I know a lot of my friends who have jobs where they work longer than they want to often do nothing while they're at work. They sit around, they surf the web, they waste time, whereas I'm really motivated to actually work when I'm working, because what I deliver is a product. And when that product is delivered and my client is happy, that's it. And if I spend less time doing it, they're even happier because it's less money. Or I raise my rate in order to basically earn what I need to, but be more productive that way.
Richard, thanks for your call. Joe, is this the problem, that we become time-orientated instead of task-orientated?
Well, I think we're task-oriented instead of time-oriented, because we have such a suspicion of time and idle time making us jumpy and fidgety. I think that our total task focus, I think, makes it impossible for us to really step back and even think and try to examine why we're doing what we're doing.
Can I scotch one myth, though? You keep on saying that the Europeans are more productive. They're not, statistically.
Well, statistically, they are. If you look at just productivity per hour, those four countries that I ticked off for you were more productive than the U.S. Last year. And as a matter of fact, all 13 European countries of the Economic Union had a higher productivity rate from 1980 to 1995 than the U.S.
800-423-8255. Let's hear from Heidi in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Heidi.
Hello.
Hi. What's your point?
Hi.
Are you a workaholic?
Oh, God, no. I have so many reasons why I'm not, but I think a lot of it, I have to agree with the rest of the callers that I've just called in the last three or four callers that I've heard. I think a lot of the problem in America is not productivity. I think the problem is, what are we being productive making? Like, as I was sitting here on the phone on hold, I was printing up reports that are going to be emailed to people who might open them or might not, and then they'll delete them or throw them away or whatever, and they'll never be looked at again. But I get paid to do that.
It's work creation, isn't it? It's like meetings. Bosses are always in meetings.
I hate meetings. I think meetings are a waste of time. And the thing is, like, once the computers really started coming into the workplace, the whole premise was that we were going to be able to work less because the computers would do so much more for us. But I think people work a lot harder now than they did before computers.
Yeah, computers create the work, don't they? They send you hundreds and hundreds of emails that you have to go through before you do anything else.
Well, they really do. And also people think that they can, you know, oh, well, we can look at it from this angle or from this angle. But the thing is, I mean, if you're still looking at something that's just minutia, it doesn't matter how many ways you look at it. But I've almost always had computers in the workplace for my career. I'm in the Gen X group, and I don't work that hard.
Well, good for you, Heidi.
Well,
good for you. Thanks very much for your call. So, Connection listeners, are you scared that if you leave your desk, your seat will be filled? Are bosses using that fear to work you to death? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. For the lazy ones among you and the majority, the workaholics. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection.
I got to get to rock and get my hat off the rack. I got to boogie woogie like a knife in the back. So be my guest. You've got nothing to lose. Won't you let me take you on a sea cruise?
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. So, whatever happened to 9 to 5? Now it's 24/7, 365. Do you live to work or do you work to live? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. My guest this hour is Joe Robinson. Joe Robinson, former editor of Escape magazine. He quit to write Work to Live. And we're joined now by Mary Miller, who owns Jankoa Janitorial Services in Cincinnati. Mary Miller, yours is a fascinating tale of changing your treatment of workers. Tell us about it.
Well, our product is our people, and we started looking at our product differently. Instead of looking at it as a cost, we were looking at it as our employees as our investment, and typically people protect their investment versus reducing costs. So we were looking at a lot of different ways, and being janitorial, our work is a lot physical. So we started looking at that thing, and we've been clients of Strategic Coach out of Toronto for 11 years. And we realized when we brought the balance into our life that free time made a major difference, from a couple workaholics working 24/7 to being able to take off 3 days a week and several weeks during the year.
So how did you change the rules then?
You know, that's one of the nice things about being an entrepreneur. The only rules there are yours.
Yeah. Okay.
So we changed and added 3 week paid vacation for all of our employees.
And what was the difference? Because you've been losing a lot of staff, hadn't you?
Yeah, our industry is horrible with turnover. It averages 360%. And right now we're at a quarter of that, and we keep improving, and the productivity has increased because our people have more free time.
So the numbers, what was your turnover? I think 360% was?
360% is typically for our industry, and we're about 125% right now.
Wow. Cut it down to a third. Mary, that's... Joe, this sounds like a blueprint for exactly what the law you're trying to get on the books.
Absolutely, yeah. Work to Live is promoting a three-week minimum paid leave law, exactly what Mary Miller has. And I think her example is a perfect case of how less is more. You get more productivity, you've got better morale, and you have a refreshed workforce. It feels good about coming to work. They don't feel like they're being beat on and taken advantage of, and they produce more in the end.
Would this be a universal law covering all workers? I mean, you know, in Europe, certainly in Britain, they get round the that law by having casual workers, contract workers. There are so many loopholes in the law that if you want to work workers to death, you can.
Well, this would apply to full-time workers at given companies, you know, no matter the size, from, you know, small companies, half a dozen on up to Fortune 500.
Unfortunately, you were scheduled to discuss this plan with Senator Kennedy and Congressman Waxman. The date was unfortunate.
Well, it was September 12th. Yeah, I had had meetings there. None, needless to say, I didn't make it to Washington, but I did this last May. And I found a very supportive reception. There is a sentiment on the Hill that the workers have been left out there on their own for too long, and that business has been too unregulated and too unlimited for too long. And I think we're going to see some movement in the whole area of work-family legislation.
What do you see one of the root causes of the fact there is no legislation, the fact that there are very weak trades unions here? There is just no culture of trades unions.
It's certainly a problem, yeah. I mean, one of the factors in the Europeans' long vacation time is certainly the strength that unions have over there. We have about 9% union membership here for private industry, which is not a big one. And I think that that is definitely a factor in workers not really having a say or being too afraid to go to management to ask for changes. I think it is possible. In my book, I have stories of people who do that, who negotiate for more vacation time with their employers and have gotten it anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. And but, it, you know, it's something that somebody would have to summon up a little bit of guts to go do, because we're not used to having protections for workers in this culture, particularly in the high-tech information knowledge age that we're in right now.
Well, let's go to that. Just briefly, thanks to Mary Miller for joining us. Christina's joining us now from Cambridge. Christina, tell us your story.
I'm actually calling from Boise, Idaho. And my fiancé and I used to live and work in the Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And we worked 80 hours a week and got all the nice rewards for that. And when my fiancé was transferred to London, he was very frustrated because he was asked by his .com to work the American schedule. And he couldn't because everybody was always closed or not there, so he couldn't talk to clients or get tours or anything. And we're now both, after the dot-com bust, working 40-hour weeks and are very frustrated with it because the money's so bad.
You want to work the 80-hour week? What, you went to London and just people were working 9 to 5, and when you want to do overtime that you couldn't get the support services?
Exactly. They were not even just 9 to 5. I mean, they were on holiday every other week. And, I mean, at this point, you know, we don't have kids yet. We're both focusing on our careers, and it's really hard. We've moved back to a place that's very focused on family, and it's actually kind of frustrating because we can't put in the overtime and get the accolades and get the money.
But, Christina, you are a couple, obviously a mm-hmm. highly skilled couple who should be getting quite a lot of money for what you do. Are you saying that two people both have to work 80-hour weeks in order to get enough money to meet your aspirations?
Not necessarily, but at this point, when we want to focus on our careers, the ability to work the 80-hour week and get the money is a nice option to have. I know when we have kids, we've already made the decision that I won't work, and we understand there will be a lot of sacrifices, but we'd like to now be able to build up the money to save, to put towards our retirement, so we won't have to worry about that when we do make the decision, when I do make the decision not to work.
There you go, Joe. I mean, it's coming from the workers themselves. They want to build up their careers.
Well, you know, it's a choice. I think that if people want to work long hours, they're certainly entitled to do so. I think what we have to be able to do, though, is have an option for people who that work is stressing to the point of burnout and physical breakdown, that there are some other options out there. And also, I think from the family standpoint, there are some serious problems out there. This is the ultimate family values issue when you can't get a quorum for dinner.
Can I bring back in Lonnie Golden now, who's an economist at Penn State University? Lonnie, we were talking about Joe's idea for a law, 3 weeks paid vacation. Has anyone costed this?
Not to my knowledge, but certainly it's being implemented in so many countries. That can be easily studied. And employers might be reluctant at first, but they'll find, we hope, and think that productivity won't suffer in the long term, so it'll pay for itself. The difference is in the U.S., employers, I think it's fair to say, they do offer vacation time. Let's not, you know, say that there's no vacation time. They do offer it, but you have to be with a company 10, 20, 25 years before you start getting vacation days equivalent to what you see in other countries. But in the U.S., we think that employers would like to grant this as an employee benefit and not have to offer it because the law tells them and mandates that they offer it.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Jack now in Greensboro, North Carolina. Jack, hi, you need a law?
No, I don't need any more laws, thank you.
What do you need then?
Well, I need for people to start taking responsibility. I don't need it, but I wish people would take more responsibility for their lives and decide whether or not they want to work for somebody for a certain wage, vacations, and when they don't believe that or don't like that, go work somewhere else.
But isn't a free will a luxury? I mean, you know, you've got to have the sort of skills that can move from one place to another.
Well, it depends on what kind of luxuries you need to live and whether you're working to live or living to work.
Tell me about your lifestyle. You seem to have a lot of choice, a lot of free will, and you seem to be in control of your life. What do you do?
Well, I spent 25 years selling printing, and it's kind of a fluid job in this area. There's a whole lot of competition. And due to layoffs, et cetera, I found, you know, there's things you can do to make money. I can't live as well as I used to or buy the things I used to. But then again, I've got more free time to spend with my daughter and friends and basically taking care of my, you know, personal life, I guess.
Thanks for your call, Jack. It's a case of supply and demand, isn't it, Lonnie Golden? I mean, surely at the moment, the employee should have the whip hand because unemployment is low.
That's right. But on the other hand, we see that employers in the U.S. tend to, although they did reduce hours somewhat, they tend to reduce jobs first or go right to jobs because that's more cost-saving. But what we'd like them to do is not just react to the business cycle, but to take into consideration these whole structures of the workplace that all your callers are alluding to get more options when they need it and their point in their life cycle, when they need to cut back on their work hours, and at least have that option available. Now, if people can't take it up, then we have to start looking at the cultural reasons for that, such as the fact that they've already spent money through debt that they have to make up. But we don't want to be in a situation where people are forced to cut back in order to spend time, like the last caller did, with his family and friends, simply because they got laid off.
800-423-8255. Let's hear from Floyd. Floyd, I gather you're on the road working somewhere in North Carolina.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I've just finished up a little over a decade working in Hong Kong, and I actually teach tennis for a living, so I was dealing with a lot of expat families, and these people make an awful lot of money, but they pay for it in other ways. I mean, the divorce rate, that sort of thing, but they're never around their kids or around anything. And I was just wondering if he had any statistics on comparing places in Asia. I know you spoke a bit about Japan, but Hong Kong, Singapore, places like that.
Interesting, you said you were teaching expats tennis. You were dealing with expats. Was there
right.
any difference between the way the expats worked and the way the local people worked? Doesn't everybody work fearfully hard in Hong Kong?
Well, yes. I mean, my wife is Australian, and she's still there, going to make sure I don't screw the pooch in this new job, but... The uh, she gets frustrated because there's a lot of, I guess what you were speaking about, presenteeism, where, you know, they work a 5.5-day work week. I mean, they're there half a day every Saturday. And she does her thing. She gets her time in, and she leaves, and she's always the first one to leave the office. But it makes her feel guilty sometimes. And I said, yeah, but, you know, how much did you accomplish? And she's, you know, far and away doing more with her time, you know, than anybody else in the office.
Floyd, thanks for your point. Good luck with the pooch. Joe, I mean, he made the point there that everybody's working hard in Hong Kong. Is this a U.S. export or is this just international competition?
Well, certainly global competition has stepped up the pace and the speed up. There's no question about that. But I think the caller also made an interesting point alluding to the presenteeism and having to be there just to be there. And that is, I think, goes to the heart of the whole debate here today, and that is our work style. We confuse the long hours and the harder we work and the more pain and suffering with productivity, with the outcome, and it's not necessarily so. And I think that's really the issue that we need to grapple with here going forward is how we can concentrate on the content of what we do instead of the style.
But, you know, you've been talking about a new law, 3 weeks paid leave. You've been hearing on the show a lot of people don't want the holiday. What do you do about that?
They don't have to take it. I mean, we're not going to force somebody to go on vacation, but we're going to just join the ranks of the rest of the civilized nations here and have a minimum paid leave law, just like we have a minimum wage law to protect the unprotected.
And as your book says, the alternative is U.S., a drained, groggy, cranky nation ready to snap in need of a good night's sleep.
Yeah, we're definitely there. We need a break badly. And, you know, vacations can do that. They can regather your emotional resources. There's a lot of research on it. They can reduce the incidence of heart disease by anywhere from 25% to 35% and heart attacks. So it does have an impact. You come back more productive and refreshed.
There you are, Connection listeners. Go on, hit the beach, and don't come back on Monday morning. Stay there for a while. My thanks to my guest today, Joe Robinson, an LA-based journalist and author of the book Work to Live, which is coming out next January. Also to Lonnie Gordon, an economist at Penn State University. Earlier we spoke to Diane Reynolds-Rome and Isabel Gitta, two vacation-loving Europeans, and to Mary Miller, who owns Jankoa Janitorial Services in Cincinnati. To continue the conversation, visit our online forum at theconnection.org. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. This